everybody. Welcome back to Is This a Ghost? I'm Clayton Smith. And every week I tell a real ghost story from real history to my real friend, Patrick Dean, who does not take it real seriously.
Nope.
But who's still standing. Still standing after all these years. All these years. As the song goes. And also after all this weekend. How was your weekend?
It was fine.
Yeah.
No, it was we went up to Chicago. Amy ran the marathon, the big marathon they do up there.
Is she going to keep doing that?
I guess so. She hasn't stopped yet.
Yeah.
So she did really well. She set a personal record.
I saw that. A pretty big one.
She PR'd by like 30 minutes.
That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yep. To the point where I was like, were you following everybody else on the race or were you like cutting through coffee shops and stuff? And she's like, no, I followed everybody.
Yeah, likely story.
Yeah.
And what time did you have to leave St. Louis to get there?
About four in the morning. In the morning, yes, in the a.m. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The kids up.
Yep. Woke up at 3, woke the kids up at 4, threw them all in the truck, started going that away. And 5 hours in the truck, get to the Blue Line stop, dumped all the kids onto the Blue Line. They got a really nice introduction to the Forest Park terminus.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Very pleasant.
That's a nice one.
It's very nice. Oof. It's very, very nice out there.
If you sweep away the needles, it's not too bad.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I had to remind the kids about that. Yeah. And then, took the Blue downtown. Kids got to see really nothing out the train window. It's all just blight.
That's highway.
Highway and blight. And got to watch a little bit of marathon. Got to play down at Maggie Daly. Got to eat some Subway sandwiches because that's the only thing.
Oh, Subway.
It's the only thing that's open in downtown Chicago on marathon day.
Yeah, they close everything down, huh?
I've never understood. Every single vape shop is open, though. Every single one.
That's good.
Yeah. Every vape shop is open. Every breakfast place closed. Like, you have a million people come to Chicago for the marathon. I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah. And they're trapped.
Yeah.
In that part of the city.
There's literally nowhere to go. You cannot get out of the race loop. And they're like, you know what? I just don't think there's enough foot traffic down here to be open.
It's nothing but foot traffic. Yeah. It's crazy.
So there's like one sad little Chicago dog stand in Millennium Park that was just like trying their damnedest to keep up with like a million people trying to order food.
It's crazy.
That was
so
it.
Dumb.
Yeah. Super dumb.
Well, Subway can be nice. And then,
yeah, it's really nice.
And then is that the South Loop Subway right there behind Columbia College there?
No, well, no, it's Wabash? Washington. Is it Washington and
the fancy
one? Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, we always take the Blue downtown, get off at Washington. The kids play on the Picasso sculpture until they break an arm or cut themselves on it or something like that, and then we head and then we walk around for a little while. So
that sounds cool. What time did you get? What time did you get home?
Pretty late, 9:10. I don't even care. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Threw all the kids into bed and then stared at the wall for 10 minutes. And then I passed out. So cool. Pretty sweet. Yeah. Pretty fun time.
It's a fun weekend for you.
Yeah. I had a really nice time.
good.
Not about me. It's not about me.
No, sure is not. Sure is not.
And kids got to see a very, very nice freak out on the Blue Line. They really enjoyed it. There's nothing like a good Blue Line freakout. I'll tell you what, on the way back, we pulled into Harlem, which is the second to last stop. Uh-huh. And I didn't say it out loud because I didn't want to, I didn't want to jinx it. But I was like, there hasn't been a good freakout on the train. We rode from the Blue Line all the way to Washington and then Washington all the way back out.
Like not even like any vomit or anything?
No, like it was there. Every station had its own like very strong body odor or not? Yeah. Bodily odor.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you know what I mean. You know where I'm going with this. Uh-huh. So like one time the doors opened up, and it was just an overpowering smell of urine, just like urine, like making your eyes sting. And then the next time it was human waste, and then it was vomit, and it just every station was its own little
it's a little cornucopia. It comes together for a nice little potpourri for the West Side.
Exactly. Yeah. So but we get back on the train. We come all the way back out to Harlem. We're one station away from the terminus. I'm like, this has been great. I've never had an uneventful trip on the Blue. I mean, you know, it's, and we pull into Harlem, and like a handful of families stand up because they're going to get off, and the conductor comes on and is screaming. I'm like, ah,
here
we go. And he just screams, "Nobody get off the train. We're not stopping here. And doors aren't opening." And I was like, not my stop anyway, but I'm a little concerned about the next stop.
Well, you know? And Harlem is a pretty popular stop. I bet a lot of people are trying to get off there.
Exactly. So we stood there at the station for 5 minutes or so.
Oh, so he stopped the train.
He did stop the train, yes. Doors did not open, though. Then some sort of CTA personnel walked past our car, like looking in our car, thinking, oh, good, they're looking for somebody. That's where I want to be. And then eventually that same person comes walking back through all the cars, you know, front nose to tail through the entire train, on the inside of the train. And I was like, okay. And then they got to the back of the train, allegedly, I guess. And then the train just started back up and kept on going. Doors never opened. And the family in the car with us is like, I guess we're getting off at the next stop. So anyway.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's good. Did I ever tell you I've had a lot of harrowing L experiences, but I think the most was not long before we moved out of Rogers Park, right toward the end of our tenure there, which is when Aaron and I got on the train going from, we were in Evanston, we were at a concert in Evanston. And so then we got on the train right at the beginning there, right at whatever street that is. And we only had to go like three or four stops to get to our stop. So we get on and there's this guy and it's like 1:30 in the morning. Not a lot of people on the train. And we get on the train. And then we, like, right before the doors close, this huge man, I mean, like, taller than me and broad, huge man walks on. And he's wearing, like blue, like, worker pants and, like, a white shirt. And he's got a blue Jewel Osco apron on.
Oh, okay.
So he walks on.
Yeah, just got off work. I get it.
Just got off work.
Yeah.
And he steps in, and he's, like, blocking the door. And he's got the most dead-looking eyes I've ever seen in my life, staring into nothing. And they're, like, kind of leaking a little bit. He's not crying, but he's, like, leaking, like, pus from his eyes a little bit. And just, like, staring at fucking nothing. And his mouth's hanging open a bit, and he's drooling a little bit. And in the front pocket of his apron sticking out is a huge fucking butcher knife. And Aaron and I just look at each other like, what is this? And he steps on right as the door is closed, so we can't get off. Right. Yeah. And so we're stuck in this sealed car with this guy for at the very least one stop. So train's going, and so we are on high alert. It's terrifying. And we go to the next stop, and the whole time the guy does not move, does not move a fucking muscle until we get to the next stop. Doors open behind him. He doesn't move. And so there are people trying to get on the train.
Right.
And they're like, excuse me. And no response. And he just stands there again, staring dead-eyed, drooling with this butcher knife in his pocket. And so they missed the train. Lucky for them.
Right. Oh, yeah. You always have to have a backup door. That time of day?
Oh, yeah.
Got to have a backup door. You got to be like, here's my primary. If something funny happens here, that's my secondary over there.
Yeah.
Because you never know. Those doors open up. Lots of things can be back there.
So many things.
So many things can be there.
So this guy, he was on it the whole time. And so then we get to our stop. We get up before the train stops. We walk to the very far end of the car to use that door.
Sure, of course.
For many reasons. Not the least of which being he's not going to move. But that's not the number one reason why. And he didn't move the whole time. He was fine. But I mean, you could just see like the handle and then like the beginning of the metal of the butcher knife sticking out of that pocket. Like, holy fuck, dude. I don't know what's happening here, but I'm getting butchered tonight. So that's fun.
That's great.
I miss the L.
I do. Oh, man. It's
some good stories.
Dull moment or a dull butcher knife.
Yeah, boy. That's good. We had Ivy's birthday party this Saturday.
Oh, she turned 7, 8, something like that?
She turned 4.
Oh, 4. That's more likely.
You would think 7, 8 because she's huge.
Yeah, she's bigger than I am.
It's massive child.
Yeah.
She weighs 1,000 pounds. I don't know. I've told you her, the theme of her birthday because we said, like, Ivy, what do you, you know, her birthday is obviously near Thanksgiving or near Halloween. And we said, what do you want your birthday theme to be? And she kept going back and forth because first she wanted Halloween, but then she really wanted Rainbow Unicorn. And we're like, well, you can't really have both. Like, those don't really
come on.
So, well,
she'll never turn 4 again.
And I was like, well, do. And some days it would be like she wants Rainbow Unicorn. Some days it's like I want Halloween. And then we got closer, and it's like you could see like this light bulb goes off. When I asked her, I was like, "So we got to choose, like, which one do you want?" She goes, "Rainbow unicorn Halloween party," and she put it all together, all on her own. And I was like, "Well, okay, what does a rainbow unicorn Halloween party look like?" And she said, "Well, it's rainbow unicorn and Halloween." And I was like, "Yep,
yeah,
okay." It's about as I don't know what I was expecting.
I thought and I was the one turning four. Stupid.
So Aaron put together a very nice invitation that said, "You're invited to Ivy's Rainbow Unicorn Halloween Party," and we just left it at that and just, you know, let go, let God, as they say. But it was great. Lots of people came over. Some people were dressed in costumes, and most people were not. And it was fine and good weather. We sat on the deck, and there was adult beverages, and the kids entertained themselves while the parents hung out. It was the best.
Lovely.
It was a good day. That was the highlight of our weekend. That wasn't really funny or anything. But I did mention I'm really tired. Do you want to hear a ghost story?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, hey. Check our calendars. Just one last time here. Let's see. Make sure I got my days right. Yeah, 1 week from tonight.
Yep.
We're recording the Halloween episode.
Yep.
It's going to be... Two Haunts and a Flaunt?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what it's going to be. 1 week from today.
Okay.
Researching starts 1 week from yesterday, I think. I think my weekend's pretty open.
Okay.
Pretty open.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, last reminder. Okay. You know Jen's going to have three stories.
I know. I know.
Backup just in case.
I know.
How insulting.
She's going to be like freaking out like Ren from Ren and Stimpy, just losing her absolute mind. It's fine. It's okay, Jen. I'm sure I'll find something.
Yeah. Patrick, don't even worry about it, Jen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, with that in mind, I feel better. Let's do a ghost story.
Ding. Ding.
Ding.
Dong.
Johannes Tiedemann.
Ooh.
Was born on April 12th, 1832, in the Kingdom of Prussia.
Yeah, that's not a Prussian. I was going to guess Prussian.
Yeah, definitely solid Prussian.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Holstein, in the town of Suderow.
Ooh, I know all of these things. And do you know why I know these things?
I do, because one of them is a cow.
One of them is from Six the Musical. That's why I know these things.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
You know a musical thing that I don't know.
Yeah, but wait, you don't know Six the Musical?
I don't know Six. Never saw Six. That's really? Like the Six Wives.
That's the Six Wives, yep.
Yeah,
yep.
never saw that one.
The concert one. Like it's a huge like blowout concert with no intermission.
I hear it's great.
It's very loud. Oh man, is it loud.
Better or worse than the Taylor Swift movie?
Better. Much better. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Anytime you get live talent, that's always more exciting.
Where did you see this live? Fox?
Yeah, at the Fox, yeah. We got the kids' tickets 1 year maybe or something. I don't know.
That's fun.
But I did go. I went to a thing.
Okay. That's good. All right, man. That's great. All right. Let's see. Johannes. So Johannes' father, Hans, owned a blacksmith shop that his father, Klaus, had purchased in 1799.
Fantastic.
We've got Klaus, Hans, Johannes.
I love it. Absolutely love it. 10 out of 10 names this week.
Johannes' mother, whose name was Wiebke.
Wiebke, yes.
Wiebke was a daughter of a wealthy landowner named Lutja Moore.
You don't have to say each time. You're nailing it, dude.
Thank you.
Just go right through.
That. Just go.
Yeah.
My German ancestry is really coming through tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Johannes was one of eight children. He had four older siblings, Klaus, Anna, Ludwig, and Katharina. And he had three younger siblings, Johanna, Rebecca, and Luis.
Luis?
It's Lois. Lois.
Lois.
Lowiese. Lois. 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 That's a song about her.
Yeah.
Lois. Anna and Johanna died in childhood.
Oh. At least none of the good names.
No. Yeah. Jettison those. Those are fine. In 1846, Hans Tiedemann, the father, he falls pretty ill, and his oldest son, Klaus, then steps in to run the blacksmith shop.
Okay.
On December 24th, Christmas Eve of that year, Hans does indeed succumb to his illness.
Oh, man.
So Hans is out of the picture.
The worst
Christmas Eve. Christmas Eve's a tough time for Hans's. Yeah. let's see. So times are a little tough for the Tiedemann family. And also at this point, there's a war brewing between Prussia and Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
Which at this point, I'd say sounds so fucking cute.
this like a war between Prussia and Denmark definitely sounds like the kind of war that you like, you take off from like October till March. Like, we're just not going to do the war. Like,
yeah.
We'll be back.
Yeah. We're going to mark our places here.
Right.
But it's going to be real cold for a while. So let's just not.
I'm going to get some kite string and tie it around the trees that I know is where we were.
That's right.
Put some stakes down. Mm-hmm. We'll be back after Easter.
Gentleman's promise. Mm-hmm. Better be back. So war's brewing. The Tiedemann family is like, I don't know, this scene is pretty played out. maybe we should leave. And so they sell the blacksmith shop, and they buy 7 tickets on a boat to the New World.
Ooh, what a cheap, shitty blacksmith shop. It is worth 7 boat tickets.
I don't know if that's the sum total of the money they got from the blacksmith shop. In May of 1848, they board a Danish ship called the Manon. I guess they weren't too much at war with
I was going to say, they're Denmark. Using their boats. Yeah.
They were prisoners. They were unwitting prisoners of war. Oh, yeah, you can get on this ship. It's going to you have to buy. This is a passenger ship.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. Please give us that money.
How much are the tickets? I don't know. 1/7 of a blacksmith shop ish.
Oh, my God. That's exactly what we have. So on the voyage, the oldest daughter, Katharina, she meets a man named Hennig Botten. Hennig Bolton.
Mm, okay.
Now, Bolton is heading to the United States because he... No, this is... Oh, yeah, no, this is right. He's heading to the United States because he has a bad cough. It's like, I didn't seem like it could possibly be true, but it's correct. I did that right. He's heading to the U.S. because he has a cough, and he thinks that the change in climate will do him some good. His doctor is like, you should go to America.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, America, right in the middle of the Industrial Revolution. Maybe hang out somewhere up in New England where the fog chokes you in the morning and the smog in the afternoon. God, it sounds just lovely.
His doctor was definitely like, you have to stop coughing around here. I don't want to get sick. Will you just fucking go to America? I don't care.
America has a cure for whatever it is you have. I promise. Ask for John when you get there.
So poor Bolton has a cough. Now, Katharina falls madly in love. I don't know. It's just the wet, phlegmy rasp of his voice is it's everything she's ever wanted. The
3 or 4 words he can get out of time are so sexy. Even it's so usually good. Like, get my rag. But that's it. He had me at get my rag.
Let's see. So now the Tiedemann's plan, once they get to America, they're going to land at New York, of course, and they're going to head west. They're planning on going maybe as far as California because they heard about the gold rush coming on.
Wow. Okay.
And they know smithing, so like, well, there's probably a lot of need for tools.
Okay. Sure.
So we could probably do pretty well out there. A lot of work out there.
Yeah. What's that saying about the only people that make money in a gold rush are the ones selling shovels?
Or that's right.
Mending them, I guess.
Or picks. You can make a pick.
Oh, probably. Yeah. I bet the pick business is booming.
It's fucking booming. Fucking booming. So they're going to head out there, but Hennig Bolton, he's going to Ohio. Or
dead
like
set.
For, dead he's set. Like, can't pull me away.
The cradle of health in the United States.
The state where they set their own lake on fire somehow. That's where I'm going to get well. So they stop there with him so that he and Katharina can be married.
Oh.
Because I think you've got, what do they have? They had 8, so they're down to 6 kids. Mm-hmm. No dad. If one of them is going to have a chance to get married off, you take it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You jettison that one too. So they stop so she can get married. Now, soon after the wedding day, Bolton learns that his cough is consumption.
Oh, no. That's the worst one.
It's tuberculosis. Let's take a stab at a button.
That's wrong. Does tuberculosis have a song on our podcast?
This
now?
Just in. Tuberculosis is back. No. He has tuberculosis. And he dies 20 days after they're married.
Oh.
Now, the good news is Katharina is the sole heir to his money.
Yes. Well, in a measure after 20 days, she can probably still see her parents on the horizon. Like, can you just wait? Oh, hang on.
Mama. So she gets his money, and Mama Vibka is like, well, shit, let's just buy some land around here then. So she, with Katharina's money, Vibka buys 83 acres of land.
Oh, wow.
So things are looking up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this land is in modern-day Cleveland, so I'm not looking up that much.
83 acres of Cleveland.
can you imagine? What would you have to pay someone to take 83 acres of Cleveland off your hands?
Man, it would be several blacksmith shops, not just the one. It would be several.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so back to our friend Johannes, the middle child here. Now, he decides to start going by Hannes.
Oh, okay.
It's a little too much effort.
Mm-hmm.
Yo. He takes an apprenticeship at a cooperage in Parma, Ohio.
Oh, coopering. Very.
Yeah, I like Cooper. I like the idea of coopering.
Mm-hmm.
He had been a joiner back in Prussia.
Okay.
You know what a joiner is?
I assume joining pieces of wood together.
Yeah, it's basically like a carpenter, I think.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And so he's probably pretty good at barrel making.
Yeah.
And so he apprentices at a cooperage there for about 5 or 6 years.
Oof.
So it doesn't look like there's a lot of room for upward mobility for Hannes in this industry. I've been interning here for 6 years, sir. Can I get a real job? No. Hannes decides he's probably ready for the next thing. So he leaves in 1855 and he heads back to Cleveland, where he joins the wholesale grocery firm of Babcock, Hurd & Company.
Okay.
So he does pretty well for himself there. He's good at selling groceries wholesale.
I mean, everyone's got to eat.
That's true. Always true.
That's what it says on the building. Everyone must
eat. That's our whole motto. That's what the guy outside with a gun to your head said. You must fucking eat. Get in the door. The Civil War kicks off in the U.S., but of course they're pretty far out of the fighting up in Cleveland. But still, it does make Hannes sad. The whole thing makes him sad.
Oh, okay.
It reminds him of the whole Prussia-Denmark thing. It's probably different than that.
Yeah, I mean, but,
you know.
A lot more exciting, I would imagine.
I think so. But. Oh, boy. And how. The other thing that makes him sad is that he's so lonely.
Mm-hmm.
He's having a lot of feelings right now. Most of his siblings are married now. They have families. And Hannes is not. He's not married. He does not have a family.
Mm.
And he starts to think, I want to be married. I want to have a family.
Mm-hmm.
So he does what any normal cool eligible bachelor would do. He gets on a ship back to Sudero to go find himself a wife back home.
Oh, wow. None of these women in the U.S.
No. There's something about Germans who really love a purebred.
I have sown my oats. I have seen the great state of Ohio. I believe I am ready. I have
seen the best that the United States has to offer in Ohio. I find it wanting. So he goes back to find, and I think we've had stories, I think, where people go all the way back to specifically, I think, Germany to find themselves wives on this show before.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I've been
there. Should have seen this old deal brewing a long time ago.
Don't get it.
No. It's the Lederhosen.
Mm-hmm.
So he heads over in the winter of 1862. Sounds like a great time to go on a ship across the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
On March 19th, he marries a woman named Luisa Hook.
Okay.
Now, Luisa's father, Jürgen Hook, was a schoolmaster, and he had been family friends with the Tiedemanns.
Ah, okay.
And so he already knew Luisa. It's likely that Luisa played with Hannes' sisters when they were little. So he just put the whole thing on easy mode.
Mm-hmm.
Just like
went. I know you. One. You know me. Yeah. You don't want to die lonely. Yes. I don't want to either.
So 4 days after they are married, they board a ship and scoot on back to Cleveland.
Oh, wow.
At which point I assume Luisa said something to the effect of, oh, no.
You were serious. Oh, fuck.
She gets knocked up good and fast. So they're having a lot of fun. They had a daughter. They named her Wilhelmina.
Mm.
And 2 months later, Wilhelmina dies from consumption.
Oh, no.
So this is, of course, quite sad.
Mm.
But aside from that, that big
silver lining. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Is there a silver lining here?
Things are going pretty well.
Okay.
He goes into business with a man named John Wiedemann. He leaves his grocery store, and John Wiedemann leaves his competing grocery store, and they make their own competing wholesale grocery store.
There you go. Everyone's in the consumption business.
Okay, I'm going to do one. I'm going to try once to find the rim shot. I have, let's see. I feel it. No, that's good too. Can you hear these?
I cannot.
What's going on with these lately? Figure this out. Jeremy, will you come fix my board? Anyway, so yeah, what makes their new wholesale grocery special is they also sell liquor there.
Wholesale liquor and grocery. Ooh, yes. Why didn't no one think of that before?
Oh, fucking idiots.
Yeah.
Dumb idiots. So he begins to build his fortune, of course. And Luisa gets pregnant again. This time they have a boy named August. August. This one sticks. He sticks around.
Okay.
So that's good. Mm-hmm. Things are going great. Then she's pregnant again. So now they need to upsize. They buy a new house at 283 Franklin Street in Cleveland.
Wow. Oh, sounds lovely.
It's so nice. What's your favorite memory of Cleveland from... you've probably been there. Have you been there several times?
I've been there. Yeah, I've been there for work, and I've been there with you. Obviously, you watched the Indians game. Uh-huh. Probably Kenny darting through traffic and getting chased by a cop. That was probably my favorite.
Really fun.
That was really neat.
I thought for sure it was like it was Frogger Live. Incredible. I like that we took a cab, and the guy spent the entire cab ride telling us the most racist joke I'd ever heard, and then got really angry when none of us laughed at it. He went a long way for that joke.
Like I was like, I know what I'll do. I'll invent Uber just because of people like me. And he made $1 billion.
Yep. So Cleveland's cool, and they buy a house there. To avoid the sales tax on the house, they put the house in Luisa's name.
Oh, women, what?
I guess it's the only note that there was about that. So
if I can't vote, I can't pay taxes either. Well, you kind of got me. I'm stuck. Actually. That's a good point.
So they have their third baby, a little girl named Emma. This one also, no problems.
Wow. Okay, that first one must have been terrible.
Yeah, first one, a little bitch. But the next two, pretty good. In December of 1869, Luisa gives birth to their fourth child, a boy named Ernst.
Ernst. Oh, that's a powerful name.
Powerful name. Ernst dies 7 months later of brain fever.
Okay, this is why I don't ever go to Las Vegas. I would be betting on all the wrong horses here.
So they're 2 for 4 at this point, but they keep on boning, and a year later they have their fifth and third living child.
Okay.
Dora Luisa.
Love it.
And she's good. For now. Hannes has a pretty good fortune going by this time. Now he's got three living kids. He sells his stake in the grocery and liquor wholesale business and becomes a real estate mogul.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Starts buying and building properties all over Cleveland. Things are going really well. In 1873, they had their sixth and final child, Albert. Albert died 2 months later.
I knew it. I was going to.
Three for six.
Yeah.
Three for six.
Not great. Also,
this time.
They might, yeah. It might have been.
I don't know.
Might have been doing fine, actually.
Still doesn't feel very good. Also that year, Hannes gets involved with a neighbor, a blacksmith named Bernard McGroder, who was a bit of an entrepreneur.
And together, entrepreneur these two. And blacksmith?
Yeah. Okay. If you can believe it. Together, they came up with an idea for an improved marine salvaging device.
Oh.
And on September 9th, they received a patent for the McGroder Tiedemann wrecking apparatus, which apparently revolutionized the marine salvage industry.
Wow. Good for them.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the McGroder Tiedemann wrecking apparatus?
I'm not in marine salvage anymore. I gave that life up long ago, but I am very curious what this patented technology was.
Here's what I'll tell you. I did Google it, and I got zero returns.
Not great.
So I don't think it made it very long. But it did well enough to make him an addition to his fortune. So things are going, finally, they're actually going very well.
Yes, minus all the dead children. But,
it's,
besides that.
Yeah. They're baked into the loss now, though. At this point, it's bright, big, beautiful future. We're looking forward. So they begin construction on a new summer house in East Rockport, Ohio. Mm. It's going to be basically a castle. It's going to be huge. They're very excited. But Emma has diabetes.
Oh, no.
Type 1 diabetes.
Mm. Is that the good one?
It's the worst one.
Oh, no. I thought it like 1, 2, the higher numbers are bad.
Is that right? Let's see. Actually, maybe let's Google it. Got which it. Diabetes is the bad one? I'm going to do this on not my
work profile. I'll Google my which work diabetes profile. Is the good one.
Yeah, yeah.
The good one. Oh, let me turn off AI results because it's trying to tell me there's no such thing as good diabetes.
Oh, my God, AI. Get with it. Probably doesn't think there's an iPhone 27 or whatever.
Oh. 95% of diabetes cases are type 2.
Yeah. So okay. I think that's the one I think that is more manageable with like diet and exercise.
Yeah. Type 1 is the one that's not so manageable with diet and exercise. Okay. Correct. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and less manageable than ever before in 1881 or whatever.
You could be killed by a stiff wind. Any sort of diabetes is a death. Yeah.
So unfortunately, Emma does have type 1 diabetes. They take some trips to Germany to try to cure her because they know about the American health system. Yeah. They're like, no, I don't think so. Even back then, no thank you. But those didn't pan out. And on January 15th, 1881, 15-year-old Emma succumbs to her illness.
Oh, man.
And then there were two. Wish I had a sound effect for that. That would be cool.
That would be kind of creepy. Wham! There you go. Yes, please put my voice right over top of that one.
And then not 3 months later, Hannes's mother, Wiebke, dies also.
Oh, well.
I mean, her cause of death was ruled old age.
Yeah.
And she was 83. So that's not surprising.
Right.
But it's still sad. Maybe. I guess. Mm. He seems to think it's pretty sad.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Maybe not everybody does, but he does.
No, but definitely he does. Let's see. As soon as the house in East Rockport is completed, Hannes moves his family into the house. And it was originally going to be a summer home, but he's like, I don't think I can live in this house anymore. We've lost a lot of children here.
Mm-hmm.
Lost my mother here. Like, it's too many bad memories.
Mm-hmm.
They move to the house in East Rockport, and they raise the Franklin Street house to the ground.
Oh, wow. Like, not just I'm done living here, but, like, everyone's done living
here. Everyone. No one may live here anymore. Mm-hmm. It's done. Now, Louisa is wrecked about all the loss, of course. And, of course, so is Hannes.
Well, not just that, but, you know, let's think. You move into the new house. Anytime you think to yourself, God, where did I put... Was that in the raised house? Did you forget to get... He's going to have a lifetime.
Is that in Rubble House?
Yeah.
Rubble House?
The egg timer. Did you leave the egg timer over there? You did. You left the egg timer in the raised house. You did. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah. Let's see. Where are we here? Oh, yeah. So they're both sad. So to distract both of them, really. He says to distract Louisa, but I'm sure, you know, himself. Hannes decides, actually, you know what's going to happen? We need a project.
Yes.
We need a project.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to take the space on Franklin Street. They're going to clear out the rubble. They're going to push aside the egg timer.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to dump everything into the ocean.
It's the Cleveland way. I don't know if you're aware.
They're going to set it all fire and push it out into the lake.
That's how half of downtown was built. It's all built on the other half of downtown.
And every once in a while, we hear a little ding happen. Mm-hmm. And I know it's time for that egg to come out of that water. I don't know. So they move all the rubble, and they're going to build a new house on the Franklin Street property.
Oh, okay.
They're going to reclaim it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a bigger house. It's going to be a better house. He's going to build himself another castle. I have a photo of this new house on Franklin Street. Would you like to see it?
Oh, please.
There you go.
Oh, I like this. I do like
it. It's nice, right?
I do like it. I have a feeling the story's not going to go so well because there is a huge no trespassing sign in the front of it.
Well.
It looks a little cursed, but it's very beautiful. Yeah. All stone. Nice. Yeah. Stone throughout, like a gray stone, three story with the spire. And I'm going to say gargoyles, maybe angels.
Those are the gargoyles, yeah.
Okay, okay.
Good eye. Good eye for gargoyles.
Well,
you watch cartoons in the 90s. You know a gargoyle when you see one.
And that one's Goliath. And that one, I don't remember what that one's named.
Let's see. I didn't write down the architectural style, but it ends up being some very eclectic. Like, the architectural style is something like Greco, Italiante, Roman, Victorian, something, because it's just like this hodgepodge of styles. All put together, looks really cool. Mm-hmm. So that's our house. So we got that. It was done by this renowned firm in Cleveland, which I didn't write down either because
who has time?
No one cares. It has turrets, as you noted, gargoyles, as you noted. It has a fourth floor ballroom that runs the span of the entire house.
The fourth floor is the ballroom.
Which that seems brave to me.
That is annoying as shit. Can you imagine?
Why do we put the kids' rooms one floor below that? That was a mistake. You're here to dance? Great. How are you with stairs?
Yeah. there's also a ladder option if you'd like.
It has, inside the house you'll find white oak wainscoting.
Ooh.
Gas lighting fixtures that were in the shape of, like, butterflies and things, like really nice little, nicely done pieces. They had walk-in closets, mosaic tile floors. There was an office that was trimmed in redwood.
Oh.
Really nice stuff inside. Mm-hmm. Very nice. So it's finished in 1882 or 1883, and the family moves in full time.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking their property back. Done with the summer house. Hannes decides he wants to give up being a real estate mogul. He's going to go into banking. He just thought, you know what I want to do now?
Yeah.
Banking.
I got a bunch of money. Let's turn it into more money.
And so, of course, because he has so much money, he instantly joins the board of directors at the Cleveland National Bank and begins serving as their vice president.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. He becomes even wealthier. And so things are going well.
Mm-hmm.
But then...
Mm.
On March 28th, 1895, Hannes' wife, Louisa, dies from a liver complaint.
Oh.
So she's got a liver disease, and never she's 57 about liver. Years old.
No. Never complain about it.
Because the liver...
It's there to help you. Okay.
Yes. Liver, famously very thin-skinned. Yeah. Here's you complaining about it. It'll turn on you like that. You're done for. So she dies, and he's wrecked.
Mm-hmm.
A few years pass, and eventually Hannes is like, I don't really need this house.
Right. But this one, I noticed he did not tear down. I am noticing that.
No, not yet.
Okay.
So far, no.
So far, it does stand. There's a photograph of it, so I'm pretty sure it stands for a while.
Yeah. Most of it, at least, is still up.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's dead. and anyone who isn't dead is old enough. They're married. Three kids now? Two kids now.
Yeah.
He's got two kids left. They're married off. They're moved out. He's so lonely. He moves out and takes up residence in one of his other houses, which is closer to work.
Mm-hmm.
He does also get remarried. And I saw there were two conflicting stories about the second marriage. One of them was that he was married up through the time when he will die later down the road.
Mm-hmm.
The other one said that he married and then was divorced 1 year later because she was a real dick. and he didn't like her very much. There may be some truth in the midpoint, because the one that said that she was around until he passed said that in his will, he's a millionaire at this point. In the will, he left her something like $50,000 in accordance with the contract she signed on whatever date this many years later. So I don't think it was like a cool marriage.
Yeah. It might have been like the world's first prenuptial agreement. That's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. So he did get married again, but it's not. I don't think it's great. He moves closer to work. He sells. Eventually, he rents out the house on Franklin Street for a little while. But after a few years of that, he's like, it's not. It's such a hassle. Again, the memory is too much. He sells the house that has come to be known as Franklin Castle, which you and I may know as Frank Castle, the Punisher.
What?
And this is the story. I did look. I was like, oh, man, wouldn't it be great if Frank Castle's full name was Franklin?
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's Francis.
Oh.
But it would be so great. So they sell the castle. Now, soon, Hannes is promoted to president of the bank. He's rising up. And so things are going really well.
Mm-hmm. You know.
But then, on April 20th, 1906, August Tiedemann, his last remaining son, dies from arteriosclerosis.
Oh.
Which I believe is a deterioration of the arteries.
Sounds like it. Yeah.
From like high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And he does die.
Hmm.
But other than that, things are going pretty well.
lots of ups and downs. Really successful career. On the other hand, can't keep any family members alive. That's okay.
You know, it's again, it's life is a series of hills and valleys.
You take the good, you take the bad. Take them both, and then you have a bunch of dead kids.
Bunch of dead kids. But things are going okay, aside from August dying from arteriosclerosis. But then less than seven months later, August's sister, Dora, the last surviving Tiedemann child, turns out she was also suffering from type 1 diabetes.
Oh.
She fell down some stairs, and she fractured her hip, and she died.
Oh. Okay.
I don't know exactly what type 1 diabetes does to your body, but that sent her like spiraling into this
stairwell.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. she was 35 years old.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So Hannes is very sad. Of course, he has lost every child he's ever had.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost his mother. He's lost his father. He's lost his wife.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost everybody except his bitch of a new wife. Yeah. He does have some grandkids at this point and some.
Who have like bullseyes on their back.
Yeah, I mean, those kids have got them. Jesus Christ. This family is cursed.
Grandpa, can we just see you every other Christmas, maybe?
So, Hannes is, he's sad. He retires from the bank. And he just goes, kind of lives his life quietly. And a year and a half later, on January 19th, 1908, he, too, dies from arteriosclerosis.
Wow. Whew.
Now, ownership of the Franklin Castle passes hands a few times. In 1921, it becomes home to the Bildungsverein Eintracht Club.
Mm-hmm.
This is a private club for German Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1921, you're going to need that because they're not held in great esteem.
Super unpopular at this moment.
Quite unpopular. Yeah. They're going to be unpopular for a little while.
With most people. With some people, though, they get real popular again in about 20 years.
Hey, good point. Good point. So it becomes a club for the German Americans. It was rumored that the house was a speakeasy during Prohibition, which seems like it may have actually been true.
Mm-hmm.
It's a variation on a German club for like 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 60s, once Germans can leave the house again in America, a couple named James and Dolores Romano buy the house from the German club and they set about restoring it.
Hmm.
One night, their two sons, whose names are Ken and Bill.
Oh, we're officially over the cool names section of the podcast, everybody. Yes. Very sorry.
So sorry. Ken and Bill were asleep in their room when some invisible hand ripped the bed sheets off the beds and started screaming in their ears.
Ooh.
Both boys run out of the room, absolutely terrified. They're screaming. They wake up the whole house. They refuse to go back into the room that night. And this apparently goes on to happen several more times. When asked about this later in life, Ken refused to answer questions about it.
Wow.
Dolores, the mom, sometimes heard the sound of a chain being dragged along the floors of the house. And then the family also started hearing the sounds of fists knocking against the walls, but from the inside of the walls.
Oh.
Definitely the worst side of the walls to hear knocking on.
Yeah. I don't even know what that would be.
I'm tapping out. I don't know. So one night, Dolores hears what sounds like an organ music playing.
Hmm.
That's now, pleasant. She can't find a source.
Do you know like, taps? No?
That's what I love to hear when I'm trying to go to sleep. My bedtime music, taps. She couldn't find a source for this, and so she eventually decides it must be the wind going through like some hole in the wall or something. You know, I don't know. And she decides to let the music just lull her to sleep.
Sure.
Which sounds pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
But little Ken hears the music too, He follows it down to the first floor and realizes that the music is coming from the floor itself.
Oh.
It's coming up from the floorboards.
Wow, okay.
Now, this doesn't make sense, but in more recent years, paranormal experts have determined that Franklin Castle, much like the Amityville Horror House, is possessed by a presence that can alter your state of mind.
Oh, that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, makes, I would say, perfect sense. Mm-hmm. One day, a family friend was over, a young woman named Karen Brown, and while she was on the second floor of the house, a pair of unseen hands shoved her toward and then down the stairwell.
Oh. Just like Dora.
Yeah. Mm. She was pretty seriously hurt, so that wasn't good. The Romanos had a daughter named Dee Dee, a little bit younger, who lived in the house when she was little, of course. One day, Dee Dee told her mother about a neat trick she could do in her room.
Oh.
She said that if she sat on her bed and read a book, when she got to the end of a page, she could say, "Turn the page," and the page would turn all on its own.
That's... Okay, yeah.
Dolores told her to never, ever do that again.
We are not getting that Teddy Ruxpin for Christmas like we thought we were. Fuck no.
Did you have a Teddy Ruxpin?
I did have a Teddy Ruxpin. Oh, my God. The best part of a Teddy Ruxpin is you could put, like, other cassettes in there. And
oh, my God.
He'd try his damnedest to sing along. It was...
Yeah, you put Metallica cassette in there, and, like, boy...
Oh, man. You have not lived.
Teddy Ruxpin doing Enter Sandman. Sorry. I spoke over you. Go ahead.
No. I was going to make the exact same joke.
God damn. You're going to do it better, I bet.
I was. I was going to make a Master of Puppets joke, but that's fine.
Things would go missing around the house, and they would turn up in very strange places. And then... And then weird people start visiting the house.
Oh.
Actual people.
Okay. I mean, I've been in Cleveland.
you bought a house in Cleveland, friends. I don't know what you thought was going to happen.
And then weird people started moving into the neighborhood. Yeah, it's Clevelanders. Yeah,
it's Cleveland in the 60s, man. I don't have to tell you. There were people who identified themselves as witches. Mm-hmm. Both white witches and black witches. And that's not skin color. That's,
yes.
You know, your alignment with with whatever the fuck.
Want to make sure you're friends with one of each. And then if you get a new white witch friend,
absolutely.
You got a new black witch friend too.
Keep your white witch and black witch friends balanced out.
It's all balanced.
Absolutely. Good magic, dark magic. You want it even? Some witches showed up. There were psychics who would show up. They all showed up and they would demand to come inside. They wouldn't like ask if they could come in. They would demand to come inside.
This explains the no trespassing sign. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's fair.
One time there was a knock on the door and standing on the porch was a man in a cape who said he was meant to be there. And they said, "You please leave."
You are meant to be across the street, according to the restraining order.
And apparently he got very upset and did not understand why they wouldn't let him in the house.
Wow.
Eventually, the Romanos brought in some students from John Carroll University to do an investigation of the house. Mm-hmm. And again, this is the 60s, so they were probably doing that like Ghostbusters style. there's probably a major in, I don't know, demonology, whatever they're doing. So a bunch of students move in for a few days into the house. And on day four, the students actually find a hidden room in the house. And inside the room, there's an oil painting of a young girl holding a basket of eggs.
Oh, okay.
So they bring it out. Mm-hmm. They show it to the family. The kids see the painting and they get very excited because this is the same girl they sometimes play with in the house.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is like
that's
her
nice.
The kids are like, "Is her name on the back of it? I would love to know." She's very quiet, except when she screams.
Oh man. Her eyes aren't bleeding in the picture though. That's nice.
She showed me how many eggs she could put in her mouth the one time though. It's awesome.
It was 50. not long after all this, the Romanos decide to sell.
Mm.
Now, they claim it's not because of the haunting. They claim it's because there was a big move. Cleveland government made a big move in terms of the dividing lines for school systems.
Yep.
And
yep.
So they're like, we got to go. So that mm-hmm. actually checks out.
Sure. Well, I mean, again, you don't want to put that on the Zillow listing. You know, because you're going to have to disclose it. You know, so you have to, it's not the hauntings. The hauntings really aren't that bad. You know,
and I mean, I'll tell you.
We keep finding new rooms, and that's just free square footage. So
this is the House of Leaves. Yeah. I don't know. You just keep going inside and inside and inside and inside. It's very spacious. The lighting, not so good. Not so good natural lighting, but so much space. I don't know. I think you're in for a penny and for a pound. You've got a family friend who like breaks a bone being shoved down the stairs, and you've got your kids being terrified by ghosts pulling off their sheets and knocking on the insides of walls. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't get you out and you're still there when you, like weirdos come to your house and demand to be let in, like, I don't know. I feel like they're in it for the ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they unfortunately had to leave for the school system. Yeah.
You passed up a whole lot of exit ramps before you got to this one.
So. Sure did. Sure did. We can't leave because of the ghosts. People think we're crazy. So they sell the castle to a man named Samuel J. Muscatello. And Sam has a good idea. He's going to turn the house into a universalist church.
That's a better idea. I like this. Mostly just good, stuff during good. The day, which is important. Yeah. And at very night, important. Just close the whole place up.
Just set it on fire and walk away. One day, a few months into buying the house, he's working on some changes. Mm-hmm. And he cuts through a wall on the third floor to expand a room. And behind the wall, he finds another secret room.
Ooh.
And in this room, he finds a set of very old human remains.
Oh.
Which does make me wonder if at some point someone did hear some knocking coming from, and it was a human person.
I can hear knocking and screaming, and I think a phone number, but I don't.
Behind the wall. Oh, yeah. So the hauntings continue in much the same style. It never becomes a church because people, it's hard to worship if you're being tormented by ghosts. It ain't the Holy Ghost. We don't want it. It's the whole thing. In 1984, the castle is purchased by Michael DeVinco, who is Judy Garland's fifth husband.
Hey.
That's a fun fact.
Wait.
Wham!
Is that like fifth in order or fifth like with cousins?
Good important question. Fifth in order.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. I know if it was like Judy Garland's like husband of a 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 husband or something.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it makes sense. Because
that's how Judy Garland's husbands worked, from my understanding.
No, it's her fifth and final husband, actually. In 1999, Michelle Heimberger buys the place with the money she had made as an early stock owner of Yahoo.
Hey.
Yeah. 1999 was the right time to cash out of Yahoo.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Like four more years and you were just, you know, lost your shirt.
It is very fitting that somebody who cashed out of Yahoo immediately bought a haunted house right with the money, though.
Yeah, it's coming for her one way or the other. She's losing everything. Later that year, the house catches on fire.
Oh.
Responders who arrived at the house found a man inside the castle still setting the fire, still like walking around. He was very determined to burn the whole place down.
Oh, okay. So like arson, like caught you red-handed arson fire.
Yeah, so he goes in, he starts a fire. People are like, oh, the house is on fire. Mm. They go to put the fire out, and the guy is still inside, still setting more rooms on fire. So... he's there to do a job, god damn it, he's gonna do that job. When he's arrested, he tells the responders, quote, I had to burn down the castle because it is pure evil.
Just like that Dairy Queen.
It caught fire a couple more times since then, but you know, you can't keep a bad house down. And today at Franklin Castle in Cleveland, Ohio, I think you can rent a room. Here's a fun thing. I'm going to show you their website.
Oh, yes.
And we're going to spend some time investigating this website. If you're not watching this on YouTube, I encourage it. At the very least, I'll put the website in the show notes, and I do encourage you to visit it for yourself. Here's the homepage, Pat.
okay, it's under a new direction. Create an account. I'm not going to create an account for the haunted house. That's not happening.
I'm going to create an account with your name.
Okay.
Okay, so stay on the lookout for that. Overnights, dare if you care.
Dare if you care. What?
I don't know. So here's this picture.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Hang on. Once upon a time, back in the 1800s, here's this. It's this poorly told story. Mm-hmm. Of Franklin's castle. And you enter, you have just stepped across the threshold into another dimension. Follow me, child. Should I click this link? I have
you
not clicked
click
this
follow
yet.
Me.
Should I click
the link? Yeah, follow me, child.
This is my work computer. Okay, follow me, child. Click. Oh.
That was weird.
Now the page says once
you see like
time.
The weird like loading image? It was like a weird
doll.
Yeah, don't
like it.
Okay.
Don't like it. This is a real-time The Ring video is what's happening here. And I thank God you're watching this with me because now it's your problem.
Hopefully we have more than one YouTube viewer this week because then it's no longer my problem either.
So I am sorry I told everyone to go watch this on YouTube. That was a mistake. I didn't know. I didn't know what we were doing here. So here's the history.
Mm-hmm.
I did not go off this history. Because
are you sure? This looks very familiar.
There is a book about this. It's a self-published book, and that is actually where I went off of. And it was tough to get through this week. I'll tell you that. Let's see, but you can stay the night. Let's see. Dare if you care. Again, you won't forget. Dare if you care. Sign in or create an account.
Ooh. So,
now this room is called the Eerie Suite.
It does look pretty eerie.
Oh,
I don't like the loading image. The loading image I don't care for.
Is it? It's not even loading. I think
is
it might
it stuck on it?
Be the image. Oh, God. Okay. Oh, I don't like that. I got it all.
$300
a night. Be serious. Wow. But it was Louisa Tiedemann's very own private suite.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good.
Do you have to be up to date on like vaccinations to stay there or something? Or?
I don't know. That's great. Carmilla. So you've got the Eerie Suite and then you've got Carmilla's Garden Suite, which sounds quite nice. Oh, Hannes's Master Chambers.
Oh, okay. This I like. A lot of built-ins. I like the built-ins.
Some high schooler made this website in 1997 and has never updated it. Takes so long to load. It's nothing.
It's just pictures and text.
$400 a night.
This does look like a nicer room, though. It does look very nice.
That's true. This one has a queen bed, so that's pretty good. 640 square feet. I don't know, man. So this is the site. You can get a room here. I'm going to make an account for you, so you can go and do this. I don't know what my castle is. Let's see. Oh, it's your account. Okay. The ominously named Moore.
Cart. Hang on. I need some shopping. Is there anything to buy? There's nothing to buy.
Nothing. I do like this gif of the swinging chandelier. So weird. Anyway, so this is the web. This is, as far as I can tell, the actual website for this house. I don't know who the fuck owns this. Oh, this is the. Oh yeah, this is good. I did see this page. This is the events page. I can't read any of this. It's way too small. But I love these images. Almost all the event images are the same. They cycle through. There's like these red candles that are lit. That's a popular one. There's one of like a demon shadow on a wall. And then spirit of
Savasana yoga.
Yoga. With, I guess you could do haunted yoga.
With Trish Sextella. Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm interested.
We'll look into it. I think we can make the account. We should make the account. We should just
see. I'm going to make the account on your game. Anyway. That's a website. And so it's pretty good and very expensive. But yeah, you could do it. And that's the story of Franklin Castle in Cleveland, Ohio. What do you think?
I didn't think we would ever get to Cleveland. But I mean, it's 170-something episodes. I guess we had to eventually.
We're running out of places to go. We're running out of places for me to Google blank haunted. Uh-huh. So Cleveland seemed right. yeah, pretty straightforward. Lots of sadness, lots of money, lots of money. They say money can't buy you happiness. And I think this story proves that wrong.
Mm-hmm. More money, more problems.
Oh my God. Is that what they meant?
That's yeah.
For every million you make, you will lose a child.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's why Elon has to have so many children. Gristle for the mill. Well, that's the story of Franklin Castle. And Is This a Ghost is a production of Smith Show Media. All the notes this week were taken by me, Clayton Smith. All the funny jokes were from Patrick Dean. Our audio editor is Jeremy Montoya. Our video editor and website, I don't know, master? Webmaster? Mm-hmm. That's what it's called. There's a name for that.
Like
the webmaster is Jen Swanson. Our social media team consists of Jennifer Jones, Sam Murdoch, maybe Kai Valonis. I'll be honest, I haven't heard from Kai in, at this point, 6 months. So, Kai, I hope you're doing all right out there. Let's see. Our merch is handled by Fox and Quill Studio. Go follow them on Instagram at Fox and Quill Studio. And whatever you do, don't cask of Amontillado people in your own house, mm-hmm. no matter how annoying they are, or else we will be talking about you next week on Is This a Ghost? Now, ownership of the Franklin Castle passes hands a few times. In 1921, it becomes home to the Bildungsverein Eintracht Club.
Mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah. They're enthusiasts. They are enthusiasts for the Bill and Ruben or whatever it is.
They've got these purple lights everywhere. Yeah. It's really cool. All their Billy Ruben is just flowing.